E1. Number 17A.
Then it comes to love, where we had I am love, I am not nothing, because love means all in all, love means the whole. Either all or nothing is usually the great question. So it comes to us and says the nature of God is the all nature. Therefore, there is no nothingness, there is therefore no vacuum anywhere, there is not a great void anywhere. Everything is filled with being, that's love. And so it comes to us as perfection, it objectifies itself and says the sense of love is really perfection. And as I entertain this divine consciousness of perfection, it comes to us really as holiness. It tells to the human consciousness and says, you know, being is holy. Holy means whole. There is nothing lacking. There is nothing incomplete. There is nothing imperfect there. And I have a sense of holiness that touches the human sense. And as I accept that and don't reject it, I accept the whole, see? And I accept the whole, and I feel a kind of unity, complete unity with God. Unity with God. And if I feel a complete unity with God, that destroys in me, see, that I have no unity with God, that it destroys within me a sense of emptiness, destroys within me despondency, destroys, so to say, within me any sense of condemnation. But especially, perhaps, you know, that sense that there is no God, which would be atheism, That is really destroyed. If I have a sense that all there is God, because we have that allness and nothingness, that great nothingness, which destroys in me the sense that, or the theory that says there is no God, That's the nothingness here. So that it destroys within me, with that unity of God, it destroys naturally the sense that there is no God. Atheism. Or an empty concept of God. An empty concept of God. All that. With my complete unity with God, you see, there is nothing left within one's consciousness which has a feeling that there is somewhere not a God, that there is somewhere not the nature of God, that there is somewhere an emptiness, a vacuum, anything like that. So often people say, I felt just like in a vacuum, So empty, I felt so empty. Why, So here, through this flow, you really free yourself from a sense to be completely empty or partly empty. One always has a feeling that one is just full. One hasn't a sense that there is any place or opportunity or occasion where God is not. That's how they usually express it. There is no place and time where God is not. So it destroys that vacuum, that emptiness, within oneself, that atheistic sense. It's quite interesting, really, the moment we really consider that last column here in Pasadena. As I was doing it, suddenly I thought, well, actually, this last column there destroys, so to say, all false sense or false teachings about God. What is the false teachings? I mean now the isms and ologies about God. If you take mind, the ignorance of God, see, as taking that as an ism is really agnosticism. That's really what it is. If people say you cannot know God, then that is agnosticism. In spirit, the false sense of dualism really is that sense that there are many gods. Not one God. In spirit we are the one, the only. And the belief is that there are many gods. Therefore, it destroys polytheism. When you come to soul, and we had there the sense that soul is in everything. That's the theory of God, that God dwells in everything. It dwells in the plants and in the stones and in the clouds and in the trees and everything. This is called pantheism. See that God is in everything. That's why they say a stone has a soul, a flower has a soul, a tree has a soul. And out of that came all the idolatry, where everything was worshipped. The rivers were worshipped, and the trees were worshipped, and the groves were worshipped, and everything became a god. Then, with principle, we had already anthropomorphism, that God is a god according to the human nature, just a big projection of human qualities into a supreme god, so that that dear god had all the nice human qualities. That's anthropomorphism. In life, it is that the theory is prevalent, that everything lives, that everything has life within itself. It's vitalism. You have vitalism. Vitalism. Do you know that? Vitalism? No? Never heard that? It's that theory, you see, that everything has life in itself and therefore has the life out of itself. And if you go to truth, you really get the theory of theodicy. Theodicy, you see? Theodicy. I don't know quite how you write it. D-I-C-Y. Theodicy, Theodicy, Theo is God. And it is the teaching that the world as it is, with all its errors and truths, is the best world possible. That's why Mrs. Eddy then asked for the theodicy of Christian Science instead of the ordinary theodicy. The ordinary theodicy says we know that the world is not perfect, but it's the best possible under the circumstances. So it takes in that there is a certain amount of truth at work and a certain amount of error at work, but that's the best that is possible at the moment. That's the theodicy. So against that, Mrs. Eddy brings forth in the chapter on animal magnetism, where she comes to the sixth subject of truth, she brings forth the theodicy of Christian Science, where she wipes out that error has any part in the theodicy of Christian Science. And then we had as the last one, in love, atheism, where it's that theory which wipes away the concept that there is a God at all. So can you see all these teachings have a true connotation of the word here, because they all refer to the statement of God, of a statement to the nature of God. First, that you cannot know God, agnosticism. Second, that there are many gods, polytheism, instead of only one God. Then third, as the theory of pantheism, namely that God is in something. See, Mrs. Eddy always explains soul as that which cannot be in something. Whereas the counterfeit says, yes, God is in everything, in every material thing. So it's pantheism. Then with principle, you have the personality of God as being human, anthropomorphism. Then in life, you have vitalism, meaning that everything has life out of itself. And in truth, where there is only one truth, the counterfeit is that truth and error work together for the best of the world government, theodicy, and in love, that there is no God at all, atheism. So we have really placed here all the main wrong theories about God into our chart. Yes. Now, you have been aware that when we did the humanly objective, that I was putting in there those qualities which we really have in the third degree of the translation of mortal mind. It's the third degree, huh? So that those qualities which appear on page 116 in Science and Health as the reality, as understanding, as the spiritual, these are the subtitles in that third degree, they appear there in that order: wisdom, purity, spirit understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness, showing really that they are the translated forms of the divine idea. See, that third degree is showing what? The third degree of the scientific translation of mortal mind, bringing out in the third degree that where she says, in the third degree, mortal mind disappears, and man in the image and likeness of God appears. It's the appearing which hits the human mind. So it comes to us as wisdom, purity, spiritual understanding, spiritual power, love, health, holiness, in a perfect sequence. Yes, in a perfect sequence, and therefore in a creative ability. Therefore we could also see, for instance, how the days of creation would come in the human aspect of it, because the days of creation too are showing that God said, that's the divinely scientific standpoint, and then suddenly something objective happens and it comes to us as the breaking in of light, as the seeking. Then it comes and breaks into us as God said, let there be a firmament, I am the only, and it appears as a firmament, as a separation. And so we can see how really through this translation from the divine to the human, the phenomena changes, but the synonym remains the same. Again, let's see what happens in this diagram here. What did Piaget say what structuralism is? He says the first keynote is wholeness. And we went out from wholeness, from the synonymous term. He said the second keynote is translation. And we could see that from one category or from one category or one column to the other, you really had translation. Suddenly mind appeared in a completely different form, namely as intelligence. Then suddenly it appeared in a completely different form, namely as wisdom. And then suddenly it appeared again in a different form as seeking. And suddenly it appeared again in another different form as destroying agnosticism. Now, each column you can see have different terms, therefore convey a completely different aspect, and yet the whole is mind. We never left the tone mind. All what we did is that we structured mind and were considering that one mind from different categories. That's all. But mind remains mind even if it's seeking. Therefore, it's mind that makes us seek. It's therefore not the human mind that pulls up its socks and says, "Ah, now I'm going to go and seek God." The impulsion behind seeking is mind. So seeking is not something by itself, an entity by itself. It is a translated form of mind. That's the second point, keynote of structuralism, translation. And the third was self-regulation, that closed loop of the cybernetic loop. Well, here you have it too. You have the very fact that if thought flows, if you have a flow chart here just on mind, mind flows to intelligence, intelligence flows to wisdom, has a new output as seeking God, and that seeking God is seeking mind. And so it turns back to mind. And you have a closed loop. It's seeking God or mind. So that one never leaves the realm of mind. Though one goes from one category to the next category, even from the divine to the human category, it's still mind that makes us seek. It's never mortal mind that tries to seek. That's why we see on this level of Christian Science constantly that the divine embraces the human, or that the human is really divine, that the human, like wisdom or seeking or separating or self-abnegation, obedience and all what we had here in the humanly subjective, is not something human actually. It's only the human appearance of something divine. It's the human appearance of mind and spirit and soul and principle and life and truth and love. Therefore, it is all wrong what most metaphysicians try to do and to explain and to say, well, you must translate the divine into the human. Nothing of that sort. You cannot translate the divine into the human. The only thing that can happen is that the divine translates itself into the form of the human. But it does it itself. And by translating it, it does not lose its divinity. So all these human qualities are actually only divine qualities seen from the human standpoint. It's divinity taking the form of humanity, and humanity taking the form of divinity. They are not two. So, you see, we started out by that terrific question, which everybody has always asked through the centuries and thousands of years of religious and spiritual seeking, namely, why can truth that does not know error, correct error, why can truth that does not know sickness heal sickness and establish health? This seems to be a paradox. Now, in structuralism, this is a point I have not touched on, in structuralism, you can resolve paradoxes. Structuralism is the method of how to solve paradoxes, and it's a simple method. Namely, paradoxes are actually only statements that seem to contradict when we believe that they are belonging to the same category. The moment we begin to see different categories or different levels, every paradox resolves itself as something consistent within itself. And this is something that even Bertrand Russell, you know, the English philosopher, has shown already many, many years ago, that he has seen that paradoxes do not exist. It's the moment you structure a paradox, it loses its paradoxy. Can you say that? It loses its nature to be a paradox and becomes inwardly consistent. Here you can see it very easy. That therefore, say, truth that is whole and that only knows itself as truth, the moment it is translated into another category, namely from the human, from the divine to the human category, it appears as health. And when it appears as health, naturally it destroys sickness. So in this way, you can therefore make that bridge from truth to error. But without categories, you can't make it. It's illogical. It remains paradoxical. So let's see what great beauty lies in a structural understanding, and how much light and understanding is achieved and acquired by really doing what structuralism asks, by taking a problem and making out of a problem a structural problem, meaning to put it into the right categories. You see, for instance, in spirit, that was also something that one says, yes, Mrs. Eddy brings out very clearly that spirit is the only substance, the only reality. There is no other reality. Spirit and matter never mix, never mingle. These are not two realities. There is only one reality, and that is spirit. Okay, if that is spirit, then the argument is, but how then can it dissolve dualism? How can therefore be a distinction and separation between spirit and matter when spirit does not know matter? Then there can be no firmament, really. Yes? From, that's why we had it, from the divine standpoint, you cannot have a firmament. Because it's the only, and you need no separation. But the moment you go over and look at the very same proposition from the human standpoint, you have that separation here, that choosing the good. From the human standpoint, you certainly get that antithesis of spirit and matter. From the divine standpoint, you have no antithesis of spirit and matter. You only have the one and only spirit. Can you see now why? When we were thinking on the level of science itself, where we only took in the divine standpoint and said, we are only looking out only as the synonymous term is aware of itself. But there, we could take only in qualities which we had here in the category of the divinely objective. There we had them. We had the same there. We had in mind, we had intelligence, we had in spirit, substance, in soul we had identity. In principle, perhaps we had the one system. In life, we had individuality, eternality. We had in truth, consciousness. We had in love, perfection, or wholeness, all in allness, and so on. Can you see that now we take those ideas, which really apply to the level of science itself, and begin to see that these are our starting points on the level of Christian science too. Because we don't leave the standpoint of the synonymous terms. And therefore, we would never put into the law of science itself the qualities which we have here under the both categories of the humanly objective and subjective. Every time I would have mentioned, you know, in that law and said, can we say, I remember very well, I said, can we say in the law of science itself that mind is its own infinite wisdom? And you said, no. Because you could feel at once that that was changing your levels. Therefore, your categories. I said, can you say, I remember that I say, can you say that truth is its own infinite health? And you said, no. You said, no. Because truth doesn't need to be health. Because health implies sickness.